I'm going to start this movie before this show. I'm going to start the show before we go into uncomfortable places. All right, so. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Commander Cast, episode 7 of...
Is this episode 7?
This is episode 7, but I usually go with the season first.
Uh-huh.
Damn it!
I have to keep mine. Take two.
It was just us. How did I do that?
See? Told you. I knew it. I knew it was going to happen. I'm telling the listeners right now, you planned this about. And just letting you know that we're in that spot is going to get bleeped out to make it sound like I said sh**.
Technology.
My wife is here.
Minutecast.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Commander Cast Season 12, Episode 7. We're recording this on February 13th, 2014. I'm William Hernandez, and I'm your host for your weekly segments of community strategy and technology. With me, as always, is my co-host and producer, Calvin. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing all right. Currently sitting in a dark room, moving to a room with light so that I can actually be able to see the cards that I plan on talking about.
And you know what, Calvin? It's a dark, dark place indeed. You're going through a heavy snowstorm, aren't you?
Yes, sir. It is the 11th snowstorm that New Jersey has had in this particular season. Not necessarily saying it's the worst, and I know there's places out there that's probably had a lot more snow than we had, but it's still a bitch to deal with.
I mean, Ohio got hit really badly, too. Like, I was actually driving home from my girlfriend's at, like, I want to say 10:30 at night. I'm driving through these backwoods. And the road's just completely covered with an inch of snow. The trucks have been through, so there's not like a huge pile of it. But there's just enough to make you think, damn, if I speed up another 20 miles an hour, there's a good chance I'm probably going to spin out and find myself in a ditch somewhere. So I decided to pull off onto the highway. And it's my side is completely empty. It's like five lanes of nothing all the way home. And I'm like, you know what? This is actually kind of sweet. One, if I spin out, I'm not going to actually hit anyone. Two,
you're not going to be embarrassed about it.
I'd be more relieved to be alive than anything else. But two, I can do donuts. Now, granted, I didn't actually do donuts, but I definitely had that possibility.
Yeah, whether he willingly wanted to do donuts is the actual question.
All right, so Calvin,
who's our guest for today, Will?
Calvin, I don't think we have a guest.
So it's just me and you here in this dark, secluded room with candlelight?
I think so. Calvin, aren't you the guy who runs guests?
Yeah, I usually do. And I had a set of guests set up for this week, but they weren't able to make it. And they'll be coming on later on during the season, but the guest I had set for this week didn't show up. And the other guest I was going to put on, you know, we just said, you know what, screw it. Why waste the time to try to rush and find another guest when we could just do a show together? And besides, we haven't done a show together all season anyway, right?
We haven't done
Just
you and me? We haven't done a show with just you and me, period, yet. Like, it's always been you, me, and some other third person here.
Really?
Yeah, we definitely have not had just a you and me episode.
I could have sworn we've done one alone.
No, not that I can think of.
Actually, no, now that I think about it, no. I mean, there's been shows we've done where it was just the two of us at the beginning and then someone showed up, or it was just the two of, like, us in a group and people had to leave, and it ended up being just the two of us. But now that I think about it, it's never been just me and you.
That's weird.
Well, we've been doing this show together for like almost a year now, and we've never actually sat down and just had an actual like conversation with each other on air.
Yeah, that's the key word, on air. We've definitely had episodes where it's just like, okay, neither of us are actually willing to hang up yet.
Well, actually, you know what? Seeing as how it is just the two of us, this would actually be a really great time to sit down and do a couple Q&As, right?
Yeah.
I mean, might as well just like, you know, get some questions from people and sit back and shoot the shit. In fact, before we go too much further, a little place online told me something recently about you.
What? What did you hear?
Yeah, I recently heard that somebody has actually physically gone out and taken a test of some kind that's made him some type of an official.
Lies. Wait, what?
So you're not a level one judge.
No, I'm just Josh. Uh-huh. Actually, yes, I did just this past weekend pass my L1 test, and might I add, with flying colors.
Oh, sweet.
Like, Jared Williams, the local level 2 for Columbus, actually thought I was going to pass with 100% until I tripped up on a couple of REL questions. You know, it's basically pretty much, how do you handle X situation when X player does something wrong?
And
I'm just
and
like...
And you said you'd exile them from the tournament and revoke their money?
Close. I was going to be nice. I was, you know, there's like a one question. Hold on. Am I allowed to talk about questions?
Well, that was going to be what I was going to ask you next. Like, right, before we go too much further, are you allowed to even answer or tell us about these questions? Because I understand that the judge test is designed to be kind of randomized, but it's also kind of set up so that if you're going in as a level one, you don't end up seeing too much complications as far as rulings are concerned.
I think I could talk about what the general question was about, because it's just rules in general. Like, as long as I'm not talking about the question itself, but the situation. Like,
okay, how's about this? I'll ask you about the situation, and, you know, I'll ask you, is this close enough to what you want?
Alright. You know what? This is good. This is good education.
So, now that me and William have had a quick moment to discuss something, I'm going to lay out a quote-unquote scenario. Not saying this is on the judge test, but, you know, just laying down the premise of what's here. So, we're at a tournament, right?
Right.
It's a draft. I open up a pack, and I see a card in the pack that I actually want for myself. You know, like something that I actually want out the pack, but not something I want to draft. Am I allowed to pick that card and keep it for myself since this is my pack? Or do I have to leave it in a pack and find, and just let it sail on with another good draft pick?
Wait, so you're asking about a card that's supposed to be in the pack?
Yeah, there's a card in the pack. I have the, I open the pack. This pack has two cards in it, two cards that I kind of want. Am I allowed to just take the card I want because it's in my pack and just toss like a basic land in that slot? Or do I have to get another pack or what?
Nope, you only get one pack per pack, one pick per pack. And if you take anything more than that when you're not supposed to, that's considered tournament theft.
So even if it's the pack that I've paid for, I've already entered the tournament, and I'm opening the pack that I've paid for, and if I take more than one card out of that pack, that's tournament theft.
That is tournament theft.
So is there like a way where I can have that card? Like say I open a pack that has like double Tomagoyf in it from Modern Masters. I ask for another pack to replace this one and just keep that one for myself?
Nope, you still can't. The pack, because even though you haven't really paid for the packs, you've paid to enter the tournament, is what's happening. And the packs still belong to the organizer until you've drafted your deck.
Okay, then.
And see, the problem with this is, if this happens at like an FNM, if they do this, you have to disqualify them. Even if it's at a casual FNM, that's what you have to do.
So even if this is like some type of sealed release draft where we're just playing casually, and what if it was someone who didn't know? Like not saying that it was a professional player like myself. Like some kid comes in, he opens his pack, ooh, shiny, and he like wants it, but he takes it, puts it in his pocket. And then he picks a card to draft with and then replaces the card he picked with like a basic land or something.
Yep. The problem is, judges are still required to disqualify them, even if it's something they didn't know. The way it was explained to me was that the only way to like get these instances noticed, like say you decide to go to the shop and you do that. You apologize, okay, you got DQ'd. Then you go to another shop and you do it again. You get DQ'd there. The only way for the local DCI grouping to really take notice and do an investigation of this is to give the disqualifications so that they have something to notice. If it's a kid who didn't know any better, he's probably not going to do it again, and it's not a big deal. But if it's someone who repeatedly does it, that's the only way you can catch them.
Gotcha. So even though it might seem unfair, it's fair because it would happen to anyone across the board. The best part about it is that the end result would be that while it might seem unfair at the moment, the person who's doing this intentionally will inevitably be caught for doing it, whereas the person who did it accidentally only gets a penalty once and then doesn't have to worry about it again because it was an accident.
Pretty much. I mean, those are the kind of questions that trip me up. The guy was actually really impressed with my rules knowledge. It's just dealing with people that I kind of need practice with.
That you kind of fluffed up on.
Oh, yeah. But he did say that if I'm working hard, you know, going to events, help getting experience and all that, continuing to study, we might actually be talking about me testing for L2 by the end of the year.
Sweet.
And apparently you have to be L2 before you actually get a name tag.
Yeah. Well, what about a shirt?
The shirts are actually provided by the tournament organizers. Like and most of them say that, apparently Star City will ask you to get the shirts back, but there are, like, a couple that let you keep the shirts.
Hmm.
Actually, I've got a friend who owes me a shirt for passing.
Is it one of the Boros Legion shirts?
No, it's actually one of the regulation Black Judge shirts. I've already got the Boros shirt in my, closet. Every F&M, I throw that thing on and put on my little Azorius pin from the Maze Run.
Sweet. I got a couple of Boros pins from the Maze Run. I have one Azorius pin somewhere floating around. I got like three of the Boros in one style.
I tried so hard to get one of the Boros pins, but everyone wanted to, they were just holding on to those for dear life, it seemed.
Like, dude, if you wanted a Boros pin, you could have told me. You just gave me your address. I'd have mailed it out to you.
No, it wasn't even so much the pin, it was just the guild. Like, you went to Dragon's Maze, you got to pick your guild, right? Everyone was taking Boros because everyone was still was going with the Gatecrash philosophy of play Boros win.
Boros smash.
Pretty much. But Calvin, there is one thing that I always ask my guests. You know what this is. So I'm going to ask it to you now since there's no one else to ask. Who's your favorite commander this week?
My favorite commander this week?
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to go with Ural the Mistwalker.
All right, Calvin. So let's go ahead and hit you up for your favorite Planeswalker.
Because
I remember last time when I actually asked you this question, it was Tezzeret.
Yeah, last time when this question was asked, it was Tezzeret. Mainly because I kind of like his character in and of itself. If I have to pick a favorite Planeswalker, if we're just going card in general, I'm going to go this week with Garruk Wildspeaker.
Garruk Wildspeaker. No one, that's a pretty popular one.
If for me to pick a favorite Planeswalker, there's really not many red Planeswalkers I want to pick. I mean, the only red Planeswalker I like to pick is a Johnny Vengeance. But, you know, I figure I've talked about enough red and white lately, so I'm going to figure out something else that I actually enjoy that's not just Boros color. The captain can be diversified, ladies and gentlemen, because Beatdown doesn't just come in red and white.
And that's the thing, we still haven't even gotten to the Boros segment yet.
No. Don't remind me. Don't remind me.
Were the mechanics really that bad?
Side note, just to say this outside of the show, and this is probably going to end up being a bleep for other people. As far as, goes, works great. As far as goes, it works good enough. As far as they don't work at all, as far as is concerned, they could have worked better had I actually had a better grasp of what I was going to do. But I'm pretty sure wasn't going to be nearly, it's not like, you know, it's not like the thing you want to do, but, you know, I could see it being something you do on an occasional thing. And as far as is concerned, there is, but it's not as bad as you think it is, if that makes any sense.
No, it does. Calvin, we've got some we got some news.
Okay, so what do we have for news?
We have, well, first of all, there's From the Realms board wipes.
From the Vault Texlist.
Damn. I was gonna, you know that conspiracy thing that we were talking about with Noel earlier?
Yeah.
That's also a thing that got revealed today, but I accidentally put that in the link for the From the Vaults.
Ha ha, it's a conspiracy. Wizards want you to talk about that first. So yeah, Wizards revealed that today. So technically today, if you're not going to see it now, but if you were to somehow grab a hold of a time machine, go back to this actual date and look it up online, Wizards still has yet to reveal the actual information about what the ciphered code is. Because they put the entire debut of this particular product completely ciphered up. And it wasn't like a letter-for-letter cipher either, because there's certain words that when you look at where they are positioned, there's, what is it, the word date and release date?
Not sure. Actually, there's actually a Reddit forum that has everything in this translated.
I was getting to it. It's not like a letter-for-letter thing, where it's not like you're going to be like, oh, replace this E with this I, and replace this L with this, and you get it. No, like, if you look at the actual phrase, like, where it says release date has two K's next to it, and all morning long, people have been trying to figure out what the cipher is. People have already figured it out, like, by the time we actually learned about it, or by the time I actually learned about it. So, since we're at the page up, go ahead and tell these people about the details for this lovely little piece of conspiracy concoction that Wizards has decided to toss at us for the summer.
So, pick plot play. Experience a magic format where the intrigue begins long before the first spells are cast. Revolutionary new abilities impact every part of the play experience, starting with the draft itself. So we are right in that it was definitely a draft-oriented set. The actual article itself goes on to say that this is a multiplayer-focused booster set draft, where it's meant to be drafted with like six to eight players, and then when the draft is done, you actually break off into groups and play regular multiplayer Magic. You know, it's also said that there's going to be some reprints, some new stuff. So this is actually a nice place for Wizards to print some of those really expensive casual cards that people want for, I don't know, EDH. And it looks like the
packs... Dublin season.
Oh, yeah! Actually, it looks like the estimated MSRP for these packs is going to be $4 a pack. So that's actually about the regular size. We're not dealing with, like, Modern Masters prices here.
Yep. And the main thing I actually would like to say about this is because they have, what was it, 61? I think that's what the number was, 61 new cards? I believe the numbers were 210 cards, 61 of which were supposedly new, give or take.
Sounds about right.
Well, that's 210. You take away 10, that's 200. You take away another 50, that leaves you with... No, it's 150. There's 150 reprints in this set. There we go. Math. Made easy.
Yep. And it's going to be available in just English, Japanese, and Chinese. Which I only say because I have a slight interest in foreign cards. More so only for Shadowborn Apostles.
Right. But because of the fact that it has these high reprints and stuff that's going to be in it, there's going to be a couple of cards in here that will probably be really useful. I'm not saying that it's going to end up being... I'm kind of hoping that this ends up being what they wanted Modern Masters to be like. I mean, granted, I would like to see like a bunch of reprints of popular cards, but I'd actually would like to see several of the other cards that I wanted, but I couldn't have because of the fact that they were too expensive in Modern Master packs, or whatever the case may be, you know?
Yeah, well, like what?
Well, like, I'd say, like, this would probably be a good place to put, like, another put Scavenging Ooze. Because while Scavenging Ooze has been reprinted and it is readily available, I personally think that it'd be, like, another good shot to have a reprint of it where people would be able to have access to it in a casual-like format. I think this would be a good place to put, like, Weathered Wayfarer, you know?
Mm. Well, Weathered Wayfarer, I could see.
Yeah,
I mean, this
could also be a really...
The ooze is only, $8.
I'm not saying that the ooze is expensive. Like, it's not, like, you know, going to break your pocket. It's not Tamagotchi expensive. But, you know, this would be, like, a good place to put Wild Nakatos. This would be a good place to put Weathered Wayfarers. This would be a good place to put Soul Ring, you know? Like, you know, just a bunch of the other, like, cards that are probably be, like, EDH staples for, like, Enchantresses and Behemoth Sledges and...
Mm-hmm. I see this. I definitely see them putting seeding some stuff for EDH in there, but I don't really see them so much as focusing on those kinds of reprints. Like,
not saying it would be those, but, you know, like, you know, just cards are just good for, cards that casual players like. Like Doubling Season. Cards that are really good for casual play. Don't really see much tournament play. But, you know, this is a great product to potentially toss those into. While Doubling Season was a great addition for Modern Masters, last time I checked, does it get much play in Modern?
Nope. I don't think so.
Right. So it just seems like this would be the set where it would have gone. Harmonize. Things like that.
Actually, that did some good work for Doubling Season. Doubling Season's averaging about $15.
Yeah. And the thing is, Doubling Season is averaging at about $15, but I personally think that it shouldn't be 15. I mean, 15 is a really good place for it, but I personally would see Doubling Season as the kind of card I'd expect to pay, like, what, maybe somewhere between the $8 and $10 range.
Sounds about right.
And this would be, like, a really good place to reprint it, to kind of bring it down to a nice casual amount where if a casual player happens to have $10 on him, he could potentially pick up Doubling Season and a couple other cards. And I also would like to just kind of throw the idea out there that if Wizards hasn't done it, when they've already probably finished the product because it's going to be coming out soon anyway, but I think the Deuce would be also another great place to put, like, full art lands.
I doubt they'd do that. I mean...
Yeah, no.
But, eh.
But the only reason I would say it'd be a good place to put full art lands is when they do casual sets like this, the only ones that ever come to my mind are the unsets.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all the other draft formats have pretty much been designed mostly to be, like, with another format in mind. Correct.
Well, yeah, but see, full light lands are actually something that's really popular right now. And Rosewater's already said that they want to save those for a set that kind of needs the extra push, the extra appeal. And this whole, we're messing with the draft format thing is actually kind of, it's appealing on its own.
Yeah, the library construction? The artifact creature we talked about last time that had the ability where it plays around with draft and allows you to do two cards at a time or something like that.
Yeah.
I think that this set would be a good place to put mechanics like that to see how people react to them.
Alright, so Calvin, we have From the Vault Board Wipes.
Yeah, From the Vault text list, because every card in this set says, you already know what it means. There's no need for you to look, it's going to just have the name, Wrath of God. You don't need to know what the actual effect on it is, or you don't need to text, because you can just be like, hey, it destroys our creatures, nothing gets regenerated. the next card is going to be Day of Judgment. It's Wrath of God, minus the regeneration. The card after that is Damnation, which is Wrath of God, but in black. The card after that is going to be Armageddon, which is Wrath of God, but for lands. The card after that is going to be Wildfire, or probably like Devastating Destructive Force or something like that. Which you don't need to know because everybody already kind of knows how those work. You just kind of have to remember the number. Because Wildfire is like 4 damage to all creatures and everyone sacrifices 4 lands. And I think Destructive Force is the same, but for 6? Or 5? Something like that? Yeah. I gotta remember what the number is.
I just really want to see a Damnation in this thing. Like, Damnation's not the kind of card I would actually go out and get because it's so expensive. But it's one of those things I'd actually really like to have.
Yeah, I was right. Destructive Force is for 5. Each player sacrifices 5 lands and it deals 5 damage to each creature. Boom. But yeah, I could easily see, if Damnation doesn't make it into, From the Vault's Annihilation, then I am personally under the opinion that it will never be reprinted. When you make a box set of 15 cards in Magic's history that are designed to kill everything, or at least do, tons of damage to everyone, if Damnation doesn't make it in there, I would be upset. I expect to see Damnation and Wrath of God. Mainly because, I personally like the idea of Wrath of God being in a... Wrath of God kind of has to be there if there's going to be a board wipe at all. And Damnation kind of has to be there because, Jesus, when are you going to reprint Damnation?
Never. I mean, this thing's modern legal, so there's never going to be a standard set that it gets reprinted in.
Yeah. I could see Damnation being reprinted in a modern day and age. I could see Damnation technically being reprinted in the next block for Theros, Journey in the Next. But I personally would prefer to see Wrath of God or something that says Wrath of the Gods or something of that nature in there.
Rage of Purphoros?
Rage of the Purphoros.
That's not even a board wipe.
It wouldn't even be a board wipe. It'd just be what's Purphoros' attack?
Like 5?
Yeah, so it basically would be Destructive Force for, instead of being 5 colors and double red, it'd be 3 colors and double red, just because he's Purphoros.
Alright, so I think that about does it for news that's relevant to us.
Yep, everyone's, what is it, Silver and Primordial was banned and the world has not ended. Commander Cast still pulls on, even though we cry a little inside. We get a chance to talk about the new card announcements. This summer's going to be fun because I love playing draft, and I'm going to pick up a box of that conspiracy set just so I can try to keep it and leave it up as a cube.
Oh, that's going to be nice. So I don't think there's really anything else we need to talk about. So, Calvin, want to go ahead and do some mailbag?
Oh, yeah, sure. Let's go ahead and do some mailbag.
Almost. All right.
Let's go ahead and do some mailbag.
All right.
There we go.
Go do some mailbag. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
We're still
going to use the transition music.
Here's a transition for you, Calvin. Let's go ahead and start with some mailbag.
Yeah, we're going to start as a mailbag.
All right. So this was actually a decent haul for something that went up only on 2 days' notice. So, Calvin,
Surprisingly, the Commander Cast listeners really do pull through for us with questions when we ask for them in short notice. But if we ask for them, in long term, apparently we never get the answers.
Okay, so we've collected questions from the Twitter and the Facebook page. We also have a question from the email. You can go ahead and do the same thing any time of the year. And you know what? Chances are we'll probably read them on air too. This is just a conglomerate mailbag, as we were. Calvin, you ready to answer some questions?
Yeah. In fact, most of the questions I've seen, but I haven't had a chance to even think of. So, yeah, I'm perfectly willing to answer questions.
All right.
So shoot them at me.
All right. First one comes on Twitter from Virgil. He tweets, question for the cast. Do you believe that the ban list should have been updated last year? If so, why? And what cards should have been placed on the ban list, if any? Virgil, that's a very good question.
And the answer is, do I believe that the ban list should have been updated last year? There are several cards that I would, let me just go ahead and say, there are several cards that I personally feel would, if I had a choice in the matter, would be on the ban list. And no, not Omniscience is not one, Eric. I'm sorry, I wouldn't put Omniscience on the ban list. But a card that I would have put on there by now would have been Deadeye Navigator.
Really?
Yeah.
I know the Deadeye Navigator is degenerate, but he's not really doing anything by himself. Because I've put the Deadeye Navigator in some decks, you know, because I've got some blinky guys trying to get some value. And he's something that I cut out a lot because he just doesn't really do anything by himself. Like, if I don't actually have enough Enter the Battlefield effects to really use with him, then he's just a dead card. Like, I'm trying him out now in my Grixis Control deck because I can use it with Archaeomancer and Mnemonic Wall and get back my counterspells. And right. I've even got the Grave Titan in there, so I can just go ahead and blink myself an army of zombies. But he doesn't really do anything by himself. And that was the whole reasoning behind Omniscience, too.
Right. Well, the main reason why I personally would have gone for the Deadeye Navigator is because of the fact of the way he, quote-unquote, protects himself. See, with Omniscience, if Omniscience is on the board, you do need other cards in your hand, right?
Right.
If you have no other cards in your hand, you can't really do anything. And yes, David, again, Navigator needs another creature in order to be even slightly effective. Other than that, it's just nothing. I get that part. The part that gets to me about Deadeye Navigator is the part where Deadeye Navigator is attached on the field with, I don't know, let's just say random card. Give me a random creature.
Bearcup.
Yeah, okay, so Deadeye Navigator is on the field, he's attached to Bearcup. They both have this bounce effect, right?
Right.
Part of me is like, well, I could shoot Deadeye Navigator and kill the Bearcup, or I could shoot the Bearcup and, you know, then go after the Deadeye Navigator, correct?
Yep.
But because the Deadeye Navigator has the activated ability that allows it to blink itself out, and then the Bearcup has the ability to blink itself out, I could spend two kill spells to try to kill them both. But then, two activations, and Bearcup blinks out, Deadeye Navigator blinks out, my two kill spells fizzle, Bearcup comes back in, Deadeye Navigator comes back in, and then pairs himself back up with Bearcup. That is the part that gets to me about the Deadeye Navigator. It's not the fact, it's kind of the creature that I want to kill. It's a combo that I want to break, but I have to literally reach for a Wrath of God activation, or some type of split second thing so you can't respond to it, or you know, something of that nature so I can stop it.
That's actually a fair point.
And that's the part that gets me about the Deadeye Navigator. It's not the fact that he's busted in combos. I mean, I've seen lots of broken combos. But the part that gets to me about Deadeye Navigator with some open mana and attached to one creature is almost physically impossible to get rid of. I mean, there are other creatures out there that are like that as well, like, what's that new card from, Dragon's Maze? Aetherling, I think it is?
Aetherling, yeah.
Yeah, he has the ability to blink himself for one mana, right?
Yep.
Yeah, like, Aetherling can do the same thing as well, and he doesn't even need a second creature. But the difference about Aetherling is he only does it to himself. I wanted to get rid of Deadeye Navigator, like, say, alright, let's take Bearcup out of the situation. You have a Deadeye Navigator, he's physically attached to a Grave Titan, right?
Right.
So you can easily just keep paying mana to blink Grave Titan in and out and make a bunch of 2/2 zombie tokens for whatever reason. Or Sun Titan, he can easily keep searching out cards in your graveyard, or whatever card. If you have him attached to a card with an Enter the Battlefield, if I'm like, oh, I don't like that combo, let me see if I can kill your Deadeye Navigator. Well, I'm going to activate it, blink Deadeye Navigator, blink Sun Titan. Okay, well, that kill didn't do anything, and now Deadeye Navigator's back, Sun Titan's back, and Deadeye Navigator is paired back with Sun Titan, and we're back to exactly where we started.
That's... You know, I haven't really thought about that. That's actually a fair point.
And that would be the reason why. It's not the fact that he's busted with other cards. It's the fact that there's no real way of, like, dealing with him outside of wrathing the board. And don't get me wrong, there's plenty of other creatures out there that I'd have to wrath the board for. You have your Geist of St. Traft, and you've got your Elves of the Mistalkers and other things of that nature. I fully understand, like, if I don't pack wraths, that's my fault. But with the Deadeye Navigator and the other cards, there's usually other ways where I can get rid of them. If I play Spotlight and I remove Hexproof, or I play the new green archetype that takes a Hexproof away, I can now spot kill your Urel. But there's nothing that I can do about Deadeye Navigator because of his activated ability. And in fact, unless I'm playing something that can counter an activated ability, like in blue or the Azurius Guildmage, yeah, like Pything Needle or Azurius Guildmage, where I can actually counter the activation, upon which time you could respond to me countering it, and whoever happens to have the most mana wins in that roar. But if you have more mana, I've basically done nothing. Deadeye Navigator still goes off, and this is not counting the concept of you reaching your upkeep and getting extra cards at untap, or some type of Pelicron situation where you have just infinite mana going on and on and on. Once Deadeye Navigator hits the board, there's almost nothing I can usually do to stop him from doing what he's going to do.
And therein lies
my main problem with the Deadeye Navigator.
I don't know what to say, Colin. That's... Damn. I really hadn't thought about that. I mean, because most people...
And the thing is, like, most people haven't really... Deadeye Navigator, from my understanding, has annoyed people, and he's shown up in groups, and he hasn't ruined enough games to be considered bad. And right. I'm not saying the card in and of itself is bad. It's just that interaction, very few people have actually come to the realization of how bad that interaction actually is.
Well, yeah, because it's usually the thing that's flickering in and out that gets all the attention, right? Like before,
yeah.
Like as bad as it was the Sylvan Primordial that was getting the attention, not the Navigator.
Right. The Sylvan Primordial is going to be what's going to get the attention. The Titan is what's going to get the attention. The As Zealot, that's going to get the attention because that's what's putting in the work. But it's kind of like the Rockweiler that's on the leash. It's not the dog that's the problem. It's the master.
Well, as for me, I think that the ban list as it was last year was actually just fine. Like, you make a very valid point about Deadeye Navigator. But in terms of what I would actually ban from Commander, I really didn't think there was anything that really needed to be banned.
Well, that's like, as far as my gripe with Deadeye Navigator, maybe it's just me. Maybe it's just something that happens in my local meta. Maybe I'm not running enough split-second cards that do kill spells.
I do see the extremely valid point of, you know, you have to have... There are specific answers that you can play for things like these. You can play, like, Sudden Spoiling, which just came out in the Commander products, as a reprint from Time Spiral. You know, creature target player controls becomes O2, and loses all bows into end of turn. Oh, that's creatures. Ooh, that's actually a lot better. You know, there are definitely answers. You can play split-second cards, you can play Torpor Orb and Pithony, you can play all the hate cards. But at the same time, you shouldn't really have to build your deck around stopping this one card, and that's kind of what the ban list is for, is to keep people from warping their decks around a particular card. People aren't really doing that with Deadeye Navigator, though. They're just kind of letting him run rampant, and people play enough wrath effects, I feel, to really keep him under control. So, yeah, that's pretty much where I'm staying on it. There's nothing I really ban from it. Ready to move on to the next question, Calvin?
Yeah, sure.
Alright, so, Dodo Bird Commander tweets in, and yes, I'm not saying anything, there's actually a Twitter account called Dodo Bird Commander. They say, how do you feel about tutoring in Commander? How many is too many? Does it matter what kind? For example, Ethereal Usher versus Enlightened Tutor. Ethereal Usher is the 6-cost transmute card from Ravnica. You know, by itself, it's a 2-3 spirit that says pay blue and tap target creatures unblockable until end of turn. But you can transmute and pay 1 double blue to tutor for another card that has 6-cost of 6. So, Calvin, we have a topic about tutoring, and this is nice because I actually was able to reply it on Twitter. I think it's up to personal taste. Some players want to play certain cards with greater frequency than others. And, you know what, that still holds true. In my experience, there's never really been such a thing as too many tutors as long as it's fun, I want to say. You know, there's fun for me and there's fun for you. If what's fun for you is being able to play these specific 4 or 5 cards over and over again, and you just want to pack your deck full of tutors and turn it into a really toolboxy kind of deck, that's actually pretty fun. Awesome. I'm okay with that. That's the kind of game that you want to play. But at the same time, there's me, and from the way I like to build my decks, I like to have a lot of redundancy and a lot of varied effects. Because the point of me building all these decks is that I want to play with as many cards as possible. And yeah, there might be some cards I want to play more of than others. I'm actually just including those cards in more decks, as opposed to having more tutors for those decks. Another thing is that it's just kind of based on price. Like, you can buy a couple packs of 2014 and have a Diabolic Tutor, or you can buy 2013 and have a Diabolic Revelations too, if you're lucky. Mm-hmm. You know, there's plenty of cheap tutors out there, but there's only so many that you can actually have and maintain so many of those decks. Like, I play Kalia, and I have a lot of the good cheap tutors that I can... cheap-ish tutors that I can afford. Like, I've got Vampiric Tutor, Diabolic Tutor, and stuff like of that nature. But I don't have, like, an Imperial Seal that costs, like, $300. And I don't have a Vampiric Tutor for, like, all of the black decks that I could ever actually conceivably build. It'd be cool. I'd definitely run it in a heartbeat. But there's only so many cards I have.
As far as my view for tutors, in general, I really have no main problems with tutors in and of themselves. As far as, like, black tutors that search out any card, I don't care. Liliana the Veil, or Liliana Vest, or whichever, the original Black Planeswalker, Liliana Vest, right?
Yep.
She can go ahead, she can search whatever you want, slap it on top of your library. I have no complaints with that. But me personally, I prefer tutors that are specific. Like, seeing as how I'm going to be talking about them now, probably talk about them more later, Weathered Wayfarer is one of the tutors that I personally enjoy, because you get to kind of search your library for a card, and it has to be like a land card. And you get to reveal it and put it into your hand. I like tutors that let me search for a specific card. Because I've come to realize that tutors that search for generic cards or just any card usually have a hefty price.
No, I get what you're saying.
Is a nice way of saying it, I guess. Because I don't want to have to pay more for my tutor than I would want to pay for the actual card that I'm searching out.
No, I get what you're saying.
I don't want to have to pay like 7 mana to search a card. Just to find out I'm tapped for the turn and I can't play the card I search.
I definitely like the cards that have a lot more flexibility in them. So usually that is the black tutors. I'll play Plea for Guidance, which is the new double enchantment search tutor, which I really like. But then there are also things like Congregation of Dawn, which is pretty much tutor up 3 creatures and put them on your deck in any order. You know, stuff like that is great for Sigarda, especially when you're running a lot of bestow creatures. So you're like, okay, I need to pump up my Sigarda. How am I going to do that? Well, I can go ahead and search for enchantment creatures. And I can use that to Voltron her up. So Congregation of Dawn got a lot more flexibility, and I like it a lot more than I used to. And I was already running it in every deck that had green-white. So anything that really has a certain kind of flexibility to it. I mean, I run a Lightning Tutor in my Numa deck. And I do that because I've built the deck to kind of use it as a get-it-all toolbox card. Like, okay, I can search for an enchantment or an artifact. So, if I need a creature, I can go ahead and search up an enchantment creature that I have in there, or I can search up for Battle Skull, which is kind of a creature. Or if I need card draw, I can go ahead and search for Divine Top, so I can start digging through my deck, or what have you. You know, stuff that gives the tutors a lot more accessibility.
I fully understand where you're coming from with that. Like the reason why I would say that I personally prefer tutors that let me search out for something specific is... it gives my brain a chance to actually think about exactly what I want. Because I've come to, a lot of times when you have like a generic tutor, yes, it does give you the option to search down anything. Like most of the black tutors basically say, pay whatever amount of mana, lose a little bit of life, search in the library for a card and put it into your hand, right?
Yeah.
But then my brain goes, well, what card in my 100 or my currently 85 card deck do I specifically need right now? And then I'm sitting there holding the deck, and I'm going through all the cards, and I'm trying to evaluate, do I want this, do I want that? Because I mentally don't know exactly which one I want. Do I want a Planeswalker? Do I want an enchantment? Maybe an instance. Maybe an equipment would be good right now. Ooh, that Orcish Lumberjack looks great. Maybe I could just go with Sol Ring. But then I end up spending all this time searching.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, if I have, like, something that's specific, my brain's like, well, I can only search up an artifact. What artifacts do I have in my deck? What artifact do I need right now? Okay, I'm going to use this now because the options have already cut themselves short enough to the point where, well, I'm going to use this and search out this Gilded Lotus, and I'm going to slap it on the field. Boom. And now I can continue with the game without having to go through the entire deck.
Yeah, that definitely sucks when you have to end up holding the table up just because you weren't sure what you had to grab. The thing I always liked when I was tutoring was I would usually have a general idea of what my outs were if I needed to tutor something to get myself out of a jam, right? So I think, okay, I need this kind of effect. So I'd be going through and I would find that kind of effect. And what I would do was I would go ahead and just kind of put that card to the front of the deck that I was searching. And I'd go ahead and look through and make sure checking all my options. And then I would often find things that I hadn't really thought about before, and those are usually the better options.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Like with a generic tutor, the upsides of a generic tutor is you have the option to grab whatever you want at the moment. If you can look down at the board and be like, I need a Wrath right now, I'm going to tutor for a Wrath. The only problem you now have is picking which Wrath you want, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But where me personally, I usually prefer using cards or decks or tutors that, yes, I'm currently stuck right now because I need a Wrath and I can't get a Wrath and I can only search for an artifact. Do I have any artifacts in my deck that's going to be a Wrath? And usually it ends up being the disc. And that's, you know, if I've slipped the disc into this particular deck or not. But, you know, that's for later. But yeah, the downside is, the upside for having specific tutors is you get to look for specific cards that you know you want. And you don't have to fumble through your deck because you already kind of know what you're looking for. But the bad part about it is you can't get everything. The good part about every card, the everything tutor, is you get whatever you want. But you waste a lot of time because you're not really sure, do you want this over that or this instead? Or you're the kid in the candy store and everybody's kind of waiting for you to make a damn decision and purchase something so we can all go on.
Yep, so let's go on and go on to the Facebook questions.
Facebook.
Yeah, this
so
one.
Answer that first Facebook question for me, Will.
Well, the first one I put up is actually from Judson, who actually runs our Facebook page. And he asks, for being a format where anything can happen and you can play almost anything, does it feel like everyone is playing the same group of cards and same handful of strategies? And this kind of goes into the ubiquitous, you know, staples argument, you know, what is and isn't a staple, and just kind of versus, you know, what's popular and whatnot. Okay, so Calvin, let me ask you. Since the new precons came out, how many people have you seen playing with, like, Morath or Nekuzar?
As far as, like, the new precons are concerned, I have yet to sit down at an EDH table where at least one or two of the new precon generals have shown up. Since they've come out, I have yet to get to a point, either I'm playing Morath, and if I'm not playing Morath, someone's playing Shattergang Brothers, or someone's playing Aluru, or someone's playing a new Shroom deck that they've got because they just happen to have Shroom and all these artifacts, and this deck came good enough for it. It's like the commanders in those decks I'm seeing a lot more of, but that's to be expected because, you know, that's kind of the purpose of the open general deck and the decks in and of themselves. They're there to be designed to be something that the casual player can pick up and have to play with. And in fact, currently in my bag right now, I have three of them. I have three of those decks. I've got, what is it, Aluru, I've got the Derevi deck, and I've got Prosh sitting in my book bag right now.
Yep.
I still have the other two floating around somewhere, but, you know, that's the thing. It's just something there.
Yep, and because some of these generals actually have, they kind of gravitate towards, you know, the same general archetypes, right? Like, if you see someone playing the Shattergang Brothers, you know, you can usually guess that they might be playing some sort of Staxy control deck, right?
Right.
And well, then, if they're seeing Wrath, then it's obviously, like, some sort of Tokidi deck.
Right, but, right, so, real quick, as far as strategy is concerned, right, I would say that the reason that it feels like we're seeing the same handful of strategies is because of the fact of the way the format is designed. Like, let me see if I can elaborate on that better. Will.
Yes.
Let's see how many strategies we can just name off the top of our heads. There's aggro.
Voltron.
There's control.
Reanimator.
There's mid-range.
Combo.
Right. Then there's, tokens.
There is tokens. There's Enchantress.
Right, there's Enchantress. Let's see. Any other strategies you wouldn't just name off? I mean, that's already eight strategies that we've named off, right?
Right. I mean, if you think about stuff like Modern and Legacy, there are plenty of strategies out there that use different interactions. I mean, I just dropped $80 to pick up almost all of the Soul Sisters deck I wanted to play Modern.
Yeah.
And Life Gain's a strategy in and of itself, too.
Yeah, so life games. So yeah, there's 9 strategies for you, correct?
At least.
Yeah, so we are just like at least 9 strategies that the two of us just named, just not even looking at lists, not really putting too much thought into it, just whatever time frame this was. That's how long it took us to come up with 9 strategies. Now, when you sit down at a table and you're playing against one person, how many strategies are going to be at that table? Usually 2. Yours and his. Maybe 3, 3 to 4 or whatever, if you're both playing like a deck that can be considered both aggro and mid-range, or both like control and combo, you know?
Mm.
But once you sit down at a table that has 4 players, 5 players, maybe 6, if each one of you individually are playing a strategy, out of those 9, only really 3 of those 9 are not going to be showing up, or at least some of those are going to be up in multiples. There may be multiple control players. There may be multiple graveyard players. There may be multiple life game players. You know?
Oh, yeah.
And because of the fact that the format is designed to have you play against more players, you see more strategies. So because of the fact that you're continuously running into strategies, you end up seeing a lot of the more popular ones more often. So you're always going to end up seeing the combo and the hexproof. You're going to end up seeing the combos and the Voltrons, and you're going to end up seeing the aggro player, and you're going to see the mid-range guy.
Well,
you're going to see the control guy.
Well, not only that, but these strategies are also archetypes. You know, these things aren't something that we're not the first ones to come up with these ideas. And we're definitely not the first ones to look at this strategy and be like, okay, you know what's going to be good in this card? This strategy? This card. You know, it could probably work well with these cards too. Like, we can name Voltron and instantly think of like 10 cards between us that just that we think automatically just kind of slot into that. I mean, we're talking about Sigarda and Earl, so we're already thinking about, okay, Aura Voltron. You probably run this, you probably run that. And those
you're
cards,
gonna run,
and those
you're gonna use it to search out this aura because you're running a lot of auras. You're gonna put this in because you're playing a lot of auras, so you can get this benefit from this. And then at a certain point, like, yeah, your deck is different, but it's not nearly as different as, you know, a regular 60 card deck would have been.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about having such a wide range, an eternal card format, on the ban list, is that, there are a lot of corner case cards and a lot of cool cards out there that aren't known, especially by the newer players. So a lot of them only see what you see in the newer sets, or the popular ones that have survived because they're so powerful, or they just do these really cool unique things. Like,
right.
Every deck that can afford it will probably run a doubling season, because yep. Doubling season's amazing.
Every deck that has the option to slap in Soul Ring or a full playset of whatever signet of your colors or needed are going to be there. Whatever deck is going to end up playing some form of is going like any white deck is going to have a Wrath. Every red deck is going to have some form of like mass removal or burn or maybe even a Wrecking Ogre or something. Like there's certain cards that you're just basically going to see. You're going to see Crows and Grip. It's pretty much inevitable. Crows and Grip is going to show up in a green deck. Harmonize is going to show up. And because it's 100 cards, you know, if this was a regular format, right, and you didn't have the one card limit, you might actually see a lot more diversity in the cards due to the fact that you could actually, well, you wouldn't see a lot more diversity. Let me take that back. You wouldn't see a lot of diversity because, you know, it'd be kind of like a Legacy or a Modern, you know?
Oh, yeah.
If Soul Ring is good, you're going to see 4 copies of Soul Ring.
Well, that's the thing, too, is that usually what determines what's best in Legacy and Modern is the meta, right? And it's the same thing with EDH.
Right.
If your play group doesn't play a lot of Graveyard Hate or barely any at all, you're probably going to see a lot of Reanimator strategies because people are going to be comfortable running Reanimator strategies. If people like to run really fast turn 2, turn 3 decks, you're probably going to see a lot of combo because that's the meta.
Right, and you're gonna see, and if you're the kind of person where there's not a lot of board wipes, you're gonna probably see a lot more tokens or aggro decks. You know, if you don't see a lot of land destruction, you're gonna see a lot of ramp decks. So whatever your play group is, or the people that's in your area like to play, kind of messes with, and kind of makes up the format. I mean, the good part about this is that once you become good enough to notice that everyone has this huge obsession with the fact that no one's doing anything to land, you can now become the guy that plays the land destruction deck. And then people start playing as much land, or start playing more answers, or things of that nature. And that's always been one of the main reasons why I advocate telling people to play more aggressively. Mainly because aggressive decks in EDH are not nearly as popular. Mainly because a lot of players don't think that they can kill all the players if they're playing aggressively. But there's ways where most decks that I've seen, or I've actually been in metas where people weren't expecting an aggressive deck, and I was able to come in and play aggressively, drop down life totals, and now suddenly the entire table is being aggro. Even if they're just attacking people with their land or elves. Because it helps.
Yep. Alright, so, next question. Robert writes in, which of the gods released so far do you think will be the most common as a commander in, say, a year? How about 5 years? Why? So, we think about the he's asking about the gods released so far. So, that's the five mono gods from Theros, and the five allied gods from Born of the Gods. When we think about the commanders, we usually think about the ones that are, you know, the top tier, the better ones. Because those are the ones people are going to be more interested in having on a consistent basis. So if we think about that, we really only have, like, three, maybe four different guys to work with. And that would be, like, Erebos, Purphoros, or Xenagos. A lot of Yosses. So I think it's definitely going to be among those three, right?
Well, I personally would say that Purphoros is guaranteed. Because he's a really great mono-red commander. I would say that Xenagos, I could see easily being good in a year from now. Because, you know, he's also a very good enchantment just to play down, and he could potentially be a really good commander in of himself. Erebos, that's the one that does the life issue.
Yep.
He's the one that deals with life and prevents life gain and all that stuff.
And he also draws you cards.
But he draws you cards, so yeah, he'll be showing around because, you know, Mono Black is back, baby. But one card I would actually kind of like to toss on there that I think will actually be a lot more useful a year from now will be Heliod.
Really?
Yes. And the main reason why I think that Heliod is going to be really good is because of the fact that he's a commander that makes tokens. It's kind of like, I could see him being the Reese to Redeem for Mono White. Well, not the Reese Redeem. We already have, like, what was it, the soldier that gives you tokens for every point of damage you take or something like that?
Darion?
Yeah, we already have Darion. But I can see Heliod filling in as, like, a good secondary version to Darion. For the people who don't play soldiers or who are just playing, like, an enchantment, because Heliod's going to be the commander. He's going to come in, and he's mainly there to churn out, what was it, what's his token sizes again? 2-1?
They're 2-1 cleric enchantment creatures.
Yeah, he's going to be the one that's going to be turning out, like, 2-1 clerics. But he's going to be, like, what is it? It's going to be him and something like, I don't know, like, maybe some type of, like, mono-white enchantress deck where, like, you're getting all these enchantment creatures and you're getting all this benefit for having these enchantments and things of that nature. Well, you know, like, because he just seems like one of those... I personally really like commanders that can potentially give you a lot of effort without actually needing any other cards.
The way you say that actually has me thinking, because what he's asking is, which do we think will be the most common as a commander? Xenagos is really scary. So right now, he's gonna be I feel like he's gonna be hated on right now, because people are gonna fear him as soon as he drops, and the only way to really get rid of him is to kill the player. Purphoros is really, really powerful, but I feel like he's almost on like, a zombie Lady of Scrolls levels of powerful, where people are going to see him, and then it's going to be all lasers targeted on that guy. And those kinds of things kind of discourage those kinds of decks. But Heliod, he kind of flies under the radar, you know? It's like, 4 mana to make a token, okay, whatever. All my dudes have vigilance, okay, whatever. So, and I think it was Eric who said this, he's the only mono-white general who makes tokens without any help whatsoever. I mean, Darion makes tokens, but you have to get hit first.
Yeah, and all Heliod is asking from you is mana, and you had to have that to get him down. And, you know, don't get me wrong, there's going to be other cards in the deck that's going to be useful in this deck. I mean, I'm pretty sure, but, you know, just an example. You were talking about your Soul Sisters deck, correct? How many of your Soul Sisters are white?
All three of them.
Right, so you put three copies of those into a deck. You have three of those on the field, and you have Heliod out. And you're paying mana, you're making your 2-1s, all your creatures have vigilance, and Heliod is giving you 3 life and giving you a dude. If you have any other way of using some type of way to untap him and be able to reuse him again multiple times, you could potentially just go ahead and just make like an army of 2-1 tokens that have vigilance. And because he's an enchantment, most players aren't really going to have anything to really destroy him. He's indestructible, you can't frozen grip him. you can't deconstruct him. I mean, you'd have to fade into antiquity him away or something, or deglamour him, right?
Right.
But since he's your commander, you can just kind of slap him back on the field. And if you're just going with a themed deck that just kind of makes tokens or kind of gets used to playing him and using him as an enchantment, he could be a very powerful commander in of himself.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think that a year from now, after everyone's kind of gotten their fill of Xenagos, and you're still going to see players that's going to play Xenagos, because they're going to be like, Xenagos is amazing. You're still going to see players that play Purphoros, because Purphoros is amazing. But I don't really see Nylea being a commander.
I saw Nylea being played in a deck where the deck was above the curve.
Yeah, but the thing, I can see, like, I'm going to make the general statement. I can see all of the gods being played a year from now and 5 years from now. But I can see them all being played as enchantments in a deck. Because they're basically in there as enchantments that could potentially become creatures, but you're not using them for the creature effects.
Yeah,
you're using them as, like, actual commanders, as actual, like, cards from your command zone. This Xenagos, because that's an effect that I want every game in red-green.
Yep.
You're telling me I have an enchantment that I played, and from this point forward, every time I play a dude, not only does he get bigger, but he gains haste? Yeah, I'm playing that. I'm playing that. That's my commander. I'm playing a red-green deck. I want that.
Yep. I think Karamich is going to see a lot more play than people give her credit for. I mean, people are saying that 5 mana is a lot for that kind of effect, and kind of why would I play that? But
who?
Karametra, the green-white one that says, whenever you cast a creature, you get to ramp out a plains or a forest. I think that's deceptively powerful. I mean, stabling a ramp of growth to every creature you play thins out your deck, and it just gives you all that big mana that you need to get to late game. I mean, most people would think they'd be fine with just, you know, 6 or 8 mana. But it's usually the guy with, like, 15 mana who's able to just kind of cast all the cards in his hand. Or cast expose for all the value.
But you see, I could see her being a commander in a deck just for ramp. Like, if you're playing, like, Azusa Lost Beseeking, you know, like, instead of just getting an extra land when you, like, getting the option to play an extra land a turn, you have this enchantment that lets you just slap down lands for free, right?
Yeah.
So I see her playing in that role, potentially in the future. For the player who wants to play an Azusa deck, but doesn't want to be stuck to just green. I can see her as, like, the niche commander for that strategy, but not really a popular commander.
No, but I definitely see her being played in the other 99.
Yeah, I can see her easily being, like I said, I can easily see her being played in the other 99. I can see her being the commander that you use when you want to play around with green, white, and you want to try this because you think it's cute. And, you know, she'll get some play, she'll get some burn as a commander for a little while, and if you're the green-white player that loves ramping, she'll probably be your staple card or your signature commander. But the vast majority of the places, I think that for a green-white deck, I think Reese will be the go-to modern-day always green-white general. He comes down early, you get to use him immediately, almost. He makes tokens, he kind of protects himself, he can do this in third, he can do that in third. And, like, he just really works in his strategy very well. Whereas with her, by the time you get to the 5 mana, you already technically had 5 mana, so do you really need more mana? The answer is yes. I mean, Grant, in the age, when the question comes up, do you need more mana, the answer is always yes. So I can easily see her being a good EDH commander. But I could see her being like she's the side chick. She's the commander you go to when you don't feel like sleeping with Azusa tonight.
I will say that I think Phoenix, God of Deception, you know, the mill god?
Yes, he's going to be around for a while.
Oh, yeah. I love that Wizards has really done a lot to really help enable mill, and we'll get to this when we do our Dimir episode later this season. But I think Phoenix, as a potential commander, is such a huge part of that. I mean, you can go infinite with Una already, but this one feels like he's a more fair version of mill.
Right, and the main thing I love about him is the fact that he promotes a defensive mill deck. You have a reason to build, like, a mill deck that's just, like, wall.deck, and you're using him to get this effect, and you kind of want him to be a creature, so he can... Does he count himself when he turns into a creature?
Yeah.
He says
creatures you control have tap target player. It doesn't say other creatures.
Right. Good, just making sure, because that word other shows up on cards a lot when I'm not looking at them. But yeah, he could easily be like one of those commanders who's like, yeah, he's going to come down, he's going to do his thing, all this stuff. It's like, and then you kind of want him to be a creature too, so you kind of want to devote him up. But you have all these, like, walls, and you've got this, and you've got these other things and whatever. Like, he just seems like he would be a really good, very powerful mill commander. Because just the simple fact that you're playing blue and black means you're going to be playing a lot of cards that have the option to become tapped or untapped. Because you're playing blue, so you can probably untap basically whatever you want. Black will probably let you untap a lot of their creatures. You're just going to pay for some life. But you're going to end up having these creatures that are just blue wall defenders or blue walls of hexproof. Or even like, what is it, a fog bank, a 0/2. Just someone who sits there who blocks. And then like right before your turn, you just tap them all. And then certainly one of the opponents is missing half his library.
So I think that about does it for this question. Ready for the next one?
Yeah, sure. What's going on next?
Well, this one comes from our boys over at East Coast Commander. They ask, would you say that you are more or less attractive than those handsome devils over at East Coast Commander? Well,
I'll let you take this one first, and then I'll respond after.
Well, I don't know about handsome, but I will say I can be cute as fuck. Like, when I was in high school, I used to do that whole, I want to be the princely white knight kind of thing, and I want to be cool and handsome looking. But you know what? Eventually in life, you just gotta kind of accept the tools that God gave you. And the thing that he gave me was just cute and charming. I am cute as fuck, and I can really work it.
So, since Will's done promoting himself, I would have to say that I am probably a little bit more attracted to the guys at East Coast Commander than I would want to actually admit on air.
But you're doing that now, sir.
Yeah, no. I'm not ashamed to say it, but part of me is like, I really shouldn't say it. But yeah, they're actually really, really cool guys. I personally enjoy them. I would love to actually have them back on the show sometime.
Ooh, that'd actually be pretty cool. But, oh, turns out that East Coast Commander was just kidding. Those guys. But in all seriousness, what do you want to see for abilities on the remaining gods of Theros? Some of them from the first two sets have been very potent. So what's next? Well, we have the enemy color gods. We have Orzhov,
yeah.
Simic, I'm pretty sure there's one more I'm forgetting at least.
There's Orzhov, there's Simic.
There's Gruul.
There's Gruul. Gruul? No, Gruul's red-green, dude. That's...
Oh, no, that's not Gruul, Golgari. I was thinking Golgari.
There we go, Golgari, green-black. And then there's, of course, you know, Boros.
What? That's a myth.
Yeah, because everybody knows red and white goes together so well, but, you know, technically, according to wizards, they hate each other. But secretly, they love each other.
Oh, my fine brothers. Now, since we do have enemy color gods to look forward to, trying to think about what I would actually want out of them. Did you see the 12 Labors article that, Ken Nagel put up?
I missed it. Do you have a link?
Maybe. The basic idea was he was talking about cards that were in the Born of the Gods file set. So he goes through and he tells different stories like, Brimaz, the King of Oriskos, was originally going to be King Leonidas. And how when King Leonidas dies, you get to put 300 white soldier creature tokens onto the battlefield. And that was going to be his thing. And he's got other things too. One of the card designs that he came up with was a card that he was trying to design after Persephone. You know, if you remember the whole Greek myth, Hades became infatuated with Persephone, kidnapped her, took her to the underworld. And so, with her gone, her mother, basically the god of the harvest, went into deep depression, and that's why we have winter. So then Zeus has to be all like, dude man, you know, kind of fucking it up. People are, you know, this kind of messes with our offerings and all that. So half a year, Persephone gets to come up, and that's when it's all spring and summer and happy, and whenever she heads up to the underworld, you know, we get fall and winter and everything's dead. So Nagel kept talking about how, you know, he kept trying to redesign Persephone over and over again, and she had like this odd, land mechanic. So they go on, she becomes like a legendary enchantment creature, and she's indestructible, and she's black-green, so that kind of sounds like the model for a god card.
Yeah, it does a lot like the green-white one.
Yeah, definitely sounds like the green-white one. Only this one had something to do with, like, lands in your graveyard or something like that.
So she was like a Crucible World.
Yeah, kind of like that. I think it was something like, players may play an additional land each turn. All cards, as long as she's in the graveyard, everything has death touch or something like that. So I'm thinking, okay, the black-green god is Farika, who we know to be a Gorgon. So I'm thinking something like that would be pretty cool. You know, something to do with just
a commander that you want to die and end up going into the graveyard.
Yeah, something that can come back, kind of like Gerard, only different. If that makes sense. Like I'm pretty sure I'm going to be using Farika as the new commander for my Golgari deck because there's just nothing else I'm really interested in. So I'm probably going to make...
I could see that. Like, I could see the green-black one having, as long as it's in your graveyard, it grants your opponents some type of ability, kind of like the, what was it, the incarnations, like Wonder and stuff, and Genesis.
Something like that. Like,
yeah, like, you know, while she's in the graveyard, she grants your creatures, like, some type of an ability. She'll probably have, like, a second ability that says something like, while she's on the battlefield, she grants, a different type of an ability.
Yeah, like the, I think the last version they had before they took her out said something like, lands are indestructible. At the beginning of your upkeep, return a land card from your graveyard to the battlefield. If you can't, sacrifice her. At the beginning of your upkeep, if she's in your graveyard, you can sack two lands and bring her back from the graveyard to the battlefield.
Right, but that's what I was thinking. Like, me, I would think that a good design would be kind of like, if it's a green-black god, I'd want it, because, you know, she's already indestructible, so getting her in the graveyard is going to be, like, you have to sacrifice her, right?
Yeah.
Because there's not really many other ways to get her in the graveyard aside from you sacrificing her. I mean, you know, like, this, the complex ways where you could play her from the command zone and put her in your hand and then discard her. But we're not talking about that. Basically, a lot of times you'd have to sacrifice her. So, I can see like a green effect where when she's on the battlefield, she gives you land or mana. But the green-white one already kind of does that. So I can see her having like the Crucible Whirl-like effect where while she's on the battlefield, you can play an additional land from your graveyard. Or you can play lands from your graveyard if they were in your hand. And then having some type of effect where, like, if she's in your graveyard, you can sacrifice lands to bring her back.
Something like that.
I could see something useful in that for a green black commander, especially for like a god.
I just wanted to be something that would be really cool to you know, build a tribal Gorgon deck around. Like,
yeah,
like nothing.
She's gotta have like some type, she's gotta have Death Touch and probably grant it to all this stuff too.
Well, they already did that with the archetypes, so I'm not sure what you could actually do with that.
I'm not saying she would give everything Death Touch, but I'm saying she would have Death Touch.
Alright, so I'm looking through. I'm looking through the other color combination gods. You know, because we know the last of the gods by names. You know, like this Keratos, which is the blue red Izzic storm god. And I'm pretty sure that if we've seen him in art, then he's actually just kind of like this huge blustering thunderstorm thing. So I'm trying to think.
Isn't he the art from what was it? The three mana burn spell from Theros. What is it?
Lightning Strike.
Lightning Strike, yeah. Isn't he like the hand that's on Lightning Strike?
Pretty sure he is.
Like, yeah, because every time you see, you know that's not like Purphoros, because Purphoros, every time you see him, it's like his hammer.
Yeah, but Purphoros is like fire and molten, and Lightning Strike's actually Keratos. It's actual lightning. And it even references him in the flavor text.
Right, so like, you know, like, I'm pretty sure that's his hand. So I'm expecting him to be like a red and blue.
I would love it if he had like a copy effect. Like, every time you cast Instant Sorcery, copy it.
I think he would probably have some type of an effect. He's blue and red. So what do we know about blue and red, right? They are the two color combinations that are...
the heaviest in spells.
So as a god of the colors of red and blue, that are the two colors that are heaviest in the spells, I could easily see him being some type of a, whenever instance or sorcery is cast, here's X. So
yeah.
I could either see it being, it's either like every time you cast an instance or sorcery, you get a copy, or every time if you cast an instance of sorcery, random player loses 3 life.
It'd be more like damage.
Or damage, or deal 3 damage to a random player.
Yeah, because if
or
it actually...
Or random opponent.
Yeah,
guys don't hurt you.
Because if you copied, that'd actually be a little close to what Melek did, and we just got Melek.
Yeah, so I could easily see him, and you know, with him be art of, with him already being kind of depicted as like this god of lightning, I could easily see him being like more of a lightning bolt, shocks kind of effect kind of guy.
You know, staple,
or like, you know,
staple bolt to instants and sorceries the way Karametra staples rampant growth to creatures.
Yeah, or maybe something, you know, very interesting in that nature. Like, here's the text that I think would be interesting to see on him. Whenever you cast an instance or sorcery, deal X damage to random player, where X is equal to the converted mana cost of the spell you cast.
Alright, I think that would actually be pretty cool.
Right, so it's like, while it's 5 mana, he's out. If you play, I don't know, Boros Charm, yeah, you get to do 4 damage to target player, or you get to get your instructable permits, but then he sees Boros Charm, so he randomly picks an opponent, and that opponent has to take 2. An additional 2.
I just hope it doesn't say whenever you cast it from your hand. Because I think it'd be a lot more fun to be able to interact with, like,
cards that have flashback or things from the graveyard or...
Or whatever. A big experiment.
Yeah. It'll probably have from your hand just to kind of, like, tone him down a bit. Because you have to remember, he does have to kind of meet up with Standard.
Yeah, I just really hope he doesn't. And Standard doesn't really have a way to cast anything from not outside the hand.
Right.
Alright, so we have Krufex, who's the green-blue god.
And that's the same color combination for Kiora that we just got.
Yep, and it's also, right. We have the Prophet of Krufex, which is like Seaborn Muse, staple to an alchemist refuge.
Yeah, so...
And then we've got the Courser of Krufex, who is like the lesser...
It's the top part of your library. If it's a land, you get to play it.
Yep, so...
Yeah, I could see her being some type of, she's gonna end up being like the future sight seeing planeswalker god. So I could easily see her having some type of ability where when she's out, the top card of your library is face up, right?
Oh, I can see
and
that.
She'll probably have some type of activated ability that allows you to take the top three cards or top two cards and shuffle them around in one way or another. I could see her being like you play with the top card of your top of your library revealed. At the beginning of your turn, you can scry two.
Well, I don't really think they're going to do that.
Or something along that line.
Yeah, that overlaps way too much with Thassa. And yeah, she's a minor god, so she's definitely not going to get an activated ability.
Yeah, that's right. She'll probably have some type of an ability to trigger. All the minor gods have abilities to trigger when something happens so far, right?
Let's see. Mogus triggers at the beginning of upkeep.
Mogus triggers at the beginning of upkeep. The green one triggers when you play a creature. The blue one triggers when you play a creature.
Phoenix doesn't trigger.
Yeah, Phoenix is the only one that doesn't trigger. But he's got like that whole, like, he needs creatures in order for it to work.
She could be something to...
Who's the other god? There's one more missing. Who am I forgetting? Xenagos, but he needs a creature too. Yeah, so they all kind of need someone else around. Like an actual physical body of creature.
Well, you know what? She could be something to do with like creatures enter with counters or something like that.
Alright. Or, you know, she might be like the play with your top of the library revealed, and if it's a creature, you may like add it to your hand or some weird thing like that. Or like you might get some effect from her if there's a creature on top of your library. You know?
Yeah.
Like, as long as there's a creature on top of your library, all creatures you control have, like, hexproof. Oh god, no, not hexproof.
We already have the archetypes.
Yeah, like, we're not talking that. Because green and blue have hexproof in them all the time anyway. And a god card that basically says at the top of your library is a creature, all creatures get hexproof? No. But something along that lines. I can see, like, you know, all creatures get flying, or some type of trample, or some other random, like, unblock ability. Yes. Something that's just like, you know, just a benefit for seeing a creature into the future.
Well, no, definitely.
Or maybe like an enchantment.
It wouldn't be unblockability either, because again, that's Thassa.
Yeah, no, but I'm just saying like some generic vanilla, Prince of Vanilla effect.
Alright, so Athreos is the black-white god, and there's really only one card to really give them any flavor. If that's the Skull of Athreos, the one that says, pay two and a black, each opponent loses a life and you gain life, equal to the life lost this way.
Hmm.
So I guess they're going to continue with the draining theme that Orzhov had from Ravnica, which makes sense. They wanted the multicolor cards to kind of have some synergy with that.
Well, I could see that. Like a god card that kind of deals with life gain or life loss.
Could you imagine how silly it would be if it had Phoenix's ability, only instead of milling, it was life draining?
Oh, is it like, say, like a tap a creature, gain life equal to its power?
No, I'm saying, like, tap target player loses life equal to power, then you gain that much.
Oh, God.
That'd be
a little bit too much. I think that person would be way too much.
Yeah, I mean, it could be, like, upkeep whenever...
Actually, you know, I could see it if it said, like, if the target player loses one life and you gain a life by tapping a creature. It's like, you don't get it because of the creature's defense or any number on it. It's like, the fact that you did it for a creature, you gain one, they lose one.
Yeah, I could see it. I don't want to say...
That way if you have like a field of like five or six guys, the most you can gain is five, and the most they can lose is five. But in the same token, it's not like, you've got a 0-8, prepare to lose eight life, I gain eight, and I'm going to do it again next turn, and I'm going to do it again next... Nah.
I'm definitely going to say it's not going to have a life gain trigger by itself, because that would just mean it does nothing on its own. but I can imagine it having some way to gain life and then having a trigger that correlates to that life.
Right.
The last one there was the release to speculate on is Iros.
We already know it. It's basically going to be like all creatures you control get some type of an ability for attacking.
All your creatures become kick-ass.
Yeah, so all your creatures get like +2/+0 for attacking, or like all creatures you control get fire breathing or butt breathing or something.
Or they all get XX, where X is the number of creatures that attack.
Right. Because she is the god for the red-white group in Theros, and they're the...
Fun fact, I was actually looking on Doug's blog earlier, and someone asked about Iros being a centaur. When I look at it closely, he's actually not a traditional centaur. Instead of having, like, the horse half, he actually has a bull half. So it makes more...
He's full of it.
So he makes more sense to be related to Mogus now.
Right. Well, let's see here. Well, as far as, wait, was it, cause red white is filled with heroic creatures, right? The red white deck is from the deck archetypes that they talk about with the pre-release and stuff. They tell you red white.
Yeah, it's usually aggressive.
It usually deals with heroic. So I could probably see her having like some type of an ability where she like allows you to get more auras or things that you can cast from your hand for a cheaper price to be able to activate those heroics a little more.
Mm.
You know, kind of give you some extra benefit to want to play auras and stuff.
Nah, because that makes it too parasitic on the rest of your deck. I think what they try to do with all the cards is try and make them kind of generically good.
Yeah.
So
well, you know, if she's just going to be generically good, I can easily just see her being like a toned down, like a I could see her being like some combination of an enchantment that's like Argus cost.
Yeah, he could definitely be that.
Like where it's like, yeah, all your creatures get this, and all your creatures get this, and if all of your creatures are attacking, they get this, and if your creatures are attacking, they're blocking, they get that because they're being aggressive and stuff. So it becomes like it's an enchantment that basically pumps up your guys and pays them for attacking. But it also pays them for blocking. So maybe, because Heliod gives everybody vigilance, right?
Yep.
So I can see it being like a legendary god that like, first strike is on the archetype. Maybe double strike.
Maybe. Alright.
Yeah, maybe like an enchantment that gives all your creatures double strike.
Alright. So enough speculation.
That's enough speculation.
Yeah, let's go ahead and move on. Yeah, we're gonna have plenty of time for people to point at us and tell us how wrong we are.
Yeah.
So this next question is from CommanderCast. It says,
yes.
Whose baby is this? Signed, Captain.
Yeah, so, William, we're going to discuss who this baby is, or whose baby this belongs to. Because every time I turn around, there's a baby floating around, and I have no idea whose baby this is.
That's kind of creepy.
It haunts my dreams.
Well, I'm going to take this as a metaphorical. This is definitely, a production of mine and Casmate. I mean, if we were to physically have a child, it would probably be this podcast here.
That's right. You and Casmate.
Yep. Casby.
You said it, Casby. You said this is probably a child of mine and Casby.
Of mine and Casby. Mine and Casby. Casby.
So whoever that Casby is, CASBY, Casby?
I don't know why I was saying Casby. I meant to say Calvin.
So whoever this Calvin is, if you happen to want to stake claim to this baby of yours, it's over here on CommanderCast.com. Hit me up in an email and we will gladly return your offspring to you.
Did that joke work as well as you thought it would?
No. But I'm gonna be honest. Sometimes you gotta risk it for the biscuit, and some jokes just ain't worth it.
I'm gonna go ahead and read this one. It's a bit of a longer one, because it's three separate questions.
Yeah.
So this one's from Sean. Will Andy ever be making a guest appearance on the show or coming back to it? 2. If you're going to censor, can you pick a different sound so I can at least kind of put together what you guys are saying? Your show is one of my favorite things that happens every week. I do a lot of driving, so listening to the show passes the time and gives me a fresh perspective on new play strategies specifically for Commander. Thanks. And question 3. In Magic Land, how do you feel about infinite combos and do you play them? What are some ways to stop the infinite combo once a player starts going to infinite? Basically, can you respond to infinite instead of playing for an hour, have an advantage, and everyone saying fucking scooping? So let's go this by a case by case basis.
Can we start from the bottom up?
Bottom up? I like to do it.
Yep. Alright, so, as far as stopping infinite combos. Yes, there are various ways in Magic that you can stop a lot of infinite combos, and most of those things usually involve cards that have split second on them. Mainly because split second are cards that just happen so fast that your opponent, they empty the stack. You can also, if you're playing blue, there's, what is it, time stop? That just ends the turn?
Yep.
And there's the artifact that does the same thing. What is it called?
Sundial of the Infinite?
Yeah, there we go. Sundial of the Infinite. Like, if you have a problem with just infinite stuff going on, like someone's playing Niv-Mizzet, Draco, like someone's playing Niv-Mizzet and he's enchanting it with stuff and you're getting like infinite burn and drawing all the cards. Most of these cards that I've mentioned or effects could easily put a stop to it. And I've come to realize, like, with infinite combos, a lot of times if you can throw a kink into their project in one spot, they're pretty much done for at the time.
Yeah, there's a, actually, Take Possession is a pretty lengthy one. It's 7 mana for, control magic, pretty much. But it's enchanted permanent, and you control enchanted permanent. You know, with split second, if you can go ahead and take something, and you've taken their key combo piece, what are they gonna do about it? What are they gonna do about it? Nothing. Because that thing happens way too fast for them.
Right, because if you, like, what was it, you have to take possession. Like, let's just go back to the earlier discussion that I was talking about with a Deadeye Navigator and Bear Cub. Your opponent's playing Deadeye Navigator and Bear Cub. You look down, you realize that that Navigator's blinking Bear Cub in it all the time, and it's just too crazy for you to handle. But you realize that you can't really take care of Deadeye Navigator that way. One good way of getting rid of it is if you're also playing blue, you can play Take Possession. That puts an end. There's no responding to this. There's no activating of the blue mana. Bear Cub is going to be paired on the other side, but Deadeye Navigator's coming over here. And once Deadeye Navigator's over here, I have the option to pay blue to blink it in and out. Or I can just keep my Take Possession on it and just keep it here.
Yeah, you just kind of keep it there because the pairing only happens as long as a single player controls
creatures. Right. So, like, you know, the Bear Cub is over there, the pairing is over with. But, like, if I want to try to find a way to attach something to Deadeye Navigator, I have the option to do it.
Yep, there's also
and
wipe.
And that puts an end to that infinite thing.
Yep, Word of Season is the red version. You know, it costs 5, and it's pretty much a threat, so you get it until end of turn. That's usually enough to stop infinite combos.
Then you can get it there in a turn, make it sacrifice it, or something like that.
There's Wipe Away, which is pretty much unsummoned for 3 mana. That's a split second card. Yeah, there's lots of cards in here in split second that do what you need them to do. You know, commander products for 2013, we got a reprint of Sudden Spoiling, which is a lot better than I thought it was because it says creatures target player controls become 0/2 and lose all abilities until end of turn, not just target creature. So you can go ahead.
Because of that, you can actually, you know, like, you can go ahead and do that, and it just kind of keeps them from doing anything at all.
Yep, you get like the Kiki Jiki player out there. This stops them cold.
No more effects.
I mean, what is it?
They're all just stuck being 0/1s, right?
They're all 0/2s, yeah. And they lose all the abilities. So yeah, you can have a bunch of Pester Mites and a Kiki Jiki. It doesn't matter where they are in that stack, as long as they have, even they can make infinite amounts of them, even. And this shuts them down for an entire turn.
And what was it? There's also Molten Disaster, which is a split second deal X damage to each creature without flying and each player. So if you can get the X at the right number, you could probably potentially just burn them all off, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, yeah, wait, no, that's,
each creature without flying any player. That works with the Zealous Conscripts.
Yeah, and you also have to pay, but you have to remember it has a kicker and you have to pay the extra red for it, for it that gain split second.
Yeah, it's pretty much red X.
Triple red and X.
Right.
So what was the second question that was on the list?
Let's see, the second question would be...
Just to get a reminder.
Yeah, if you're going to censor, can you pick a different sound so I can at least kind of put together what you guys are saying?
Okay, as far as picking a different sound, yes, we can pick a different sound. It was something I was actually kind of thinking about before, because the random Zoidberg Maelstrom Wanderer sound effect is a little bit longer than I kind of want it to be for every curse. Because sometimes you have curses like fuck, or you have curses like damn, or you have curses like shit, or motherfucker, or cocksucker. And some of these curses actually do require a longer curse censor. But if anything, if you've heard a different sound just now, then the answer to your question is there. I found a different one. If you still hear Zoidberg, it's because over the weekend I couldn't find a sound that I thought was worth using outside of just a regular censor beep, and I'm not using that.
Oh, you know, yes, you actually have another week or so to put this up, right?
Yeah, I know.
All right.
But that's the thing. Like, if I'm, like, sitting here, like, I basically have a week. If I can't find a decent sound to use for curses, for those curses that I just used, then yeah, I can't really help. But in the same token, if I find, like, you know, different words or different sound effects that can help you decipher what was actually said there, then yeah, your wish has been granted.
Alright, so the final question here, and this is what I'm going to introduce first, and then you can go ahead and talk about what you found out. Will Andy ever be making a guest appearance on the show or coming back to it? So, if you're new to the show, we've picked you up in the past year, year and a half, something like that, then so far I'm the only primary host that you know. So I'm going to tell you kids a tale. Way back in the old years of 2012, and what was it, 2010 to 2012? Yeah.
Yeah,
Commander Cast was actually hosted and run by a guy named Andy. You know, he would update the website by himself, he edited the show by himself, he hosted it by himself, he scheduled everything by himself, set up the topics by himself. You know, he was taking suggestions, of course, but he would schedule, he did everything by himself. The guy was wearing like 7 hats at once. And I was just, you know, just a lowly staff writer when I started working with the podcast. So what happened was, sometime in October-ish, Andy had decided that he was going to get ready to retire, pretty much. He just was tired of podcasting, he said everything he needed to say, and he was actually just falling out of magic entirely. That's not really someone that can be hosting a podcast and running a site at the same time. So he put out an APB for anyone who just wanted to go ahead and continue the podcast, continue running the site. He was going to hand it over to them. They would pay the hosting fees themselves, and that would be that. He would leave. So I would talk to him about it for a couple of months. In December, he finally confirmed that I was going to take over the website. And then with episode 100, he left. That was it. So, Calvin, what's happened since then?
Since then, episode 100, Andy left. Between episode 101 and now, William has been your primary host. Somewhere about midway through there, I showed up as your basic secondary host who runs the show when William's physically not able to do so or help put the show up. Quite frankly, getting enough people to do the job that Andy did, it just seems kind of like weird that we had to hire almost like an entire staff of people to kind of make up for one man. But Andy was really one amazing person in and of itself. Like, just the fact that he was able to do all this stuff like astonishes me. As far as future references for getting Andy back on the show, I have on several occasions, you know, contacted Andy, and I still talk with him briefly here and now and there to try to see if he'd, you know, be willing to come on the show, see if he'd ever think about coming back. And a lot of times Andy usually just gives me like a flat out no. He usually tells me he's not in the mood for it. He tells me sometimes he's even told me recently, like, he doesn't even like play Magic as much anymore. So because he has with the free time he's had from not doing the show, he's basically become the Chuck Norris of Canada. Like, the man's, like, out there, like, shooting, learning, like, he's gotten better at shooting guns and hunting and all of these other various, like, just bear mountain things that I would consider, like, 17 times more masculine than anything I've done on a regular basis. And, you know, I'm not saying that the man would never come back. I'm pretty sure, you know, right around the time the show hits episode 200, I might be able to try to convince him to come back. But then the real question then becomes, if you're talking to a man who hasn't played Magic in about 2 years at all, hasn't played Commander in 2 years, or has quit Magic for about a year now, and you want him to come back on your show to talk about it, I'm not sure if he'd really have much to say. But, you know, I do what I can to try to keep in contact with him, and like I keep, you know, poking the bear, as it were. And, you know, maybe. I'm not going to say never, because I'm never going to say it's not happening. I'm pretty much under the impression that with enough talk and enough random pokes and enough random discussion and enough emails to him, I could potentially have him back on as a guest at some point or another. As far as being like permanently back on the show, I doubt he'll actually ever be permanently back on the show, because, you know, if he ever did come back on the show, he'd want to be running it.
Yeah. And I've got my claws firmly into the controls of Commander Cast, and I'm not letting that go.
And I really have kind of gotten really personally enjoying in the actual concept of how to fix and edit and stuff. And yeah, let's put it like this. We both enjoy the site too much. We enjoy talking to you people and having you guys listen to us.
We enjoy having random ass bullshit hours before that we actually record content for the podcast where we talk about David Bowie and Batman.
Yeah. So, like, you know, me and William and, you know, the people on the staff, we really enjoyed the site. And if Andy came back, granted, you guys would get a totally different product, but, you know, you would probably lose the people who are currently here to some extent. Some of the people would be gone. Some of us would just take on different roles. But, yeah, I'm pretty sure I would still be regularly podcasting myself, because after doing this, I probably would have just said to hell with it and just made, like, another version of a Commander podcast. Wouldn't be off-color cast, though, because, you know, I kind of enjoy keeping that as just Cassidy and Chris and myself.
Yep. All right. So, we got one last question from the Facebook here. This one's from Aaron. What's the next card you guys would like to see banned or unbanned, and why? Well, we already did the ban, so let's go ahead and talk about stuff that we would like to see unbanned.
Primeval Titan. And I'm just saying it's a starship.
Well, why don't you go ahead and talk about that while I go ahead and bring up the ban list?
Oh, okay, well, I'm just going to say Primeval Titan, mainly because of the fact that, quite frankly, if Sylvan Primordial was banned, I would like to see Primeval get unbanned just so people can sit back and go, I can't believe you would ban Sylvan Primordial but give us the Primeval Titan back. I'm pretty sure there'd be plenty of people out there that would shit bricks just because of the fact that someone brought back Primeval Titan. If you're talking about my honest opinion about certain cards that I'd want to see off the ban list, the one card I would actually really like to see off the ban list is Mox Ruby.
Hmm. Well, is that just because it's, like, just Mox?
Well, not just the Moxes. I wouldn't want the blue Mox off. I wouldn't want, like, the green Mox off. I wouldn't want maybe the white, the black, and the red one. I'd like to see. And my reasoning being blue doesn't need the blue Mox. Because blue is blue, and blue is already broken enough as it is. I wouldn't want to see the blue Mox. The green Mox, I wouldn't want to see, because green already has more than enough ways to produce mana that it doesn't need a Mox. And red, I could see needing a Mox, because, you know, red kind of is one of those colors that just kind of needs to help, you know?
Yeah.
It's like throw a bone to the weaker player. It's like, you know. But, and the white Mox, I could see kind of falling right around red. White could use the extra mana. I mean, granted, it'd be stuck in blue and white decks most of the time, but I think, like, if the red Mox came off, the worst deck it would show up in would be red-green decks. Or, like, because any other deck, it'd be just, like, what, red-blue-black? Grixis would probably be the next deck that would probably be able to abuse it the most with artifact searching and stuff.
Yeah.
But even then, you're playing three colors and you're getting an artifact that produces, that's zero cost and produces one mana. It wouldn't be too bad. And the black Mox, I kind of just have it thrown up in the air. I mean, I could see black being producing a lot of unnecessary mana, but then black does that anyway. But that's just me saying, like, things that I would like to see. I'm not saying that it ever would happen, though.
Yeah, I mean, if I was...
I just got the ban list up.
All right, so for me personally, I'm looking through, and there's actually not a lot I would actually unban. I can see the problems with virtually most of these cards. I mean, I'm not really a big fan of Sylvan Primordial going on the ban list, but I'm not really that unkeen to unban it now either. So, if I did pick one of these cards, it'd probably be...
Which card would you pick?
Gifts Ungiven. You know, the 4-cost instant that says, search your library for 4 cards with different names and reveal them. Target opponent chooses 2 of those cards, put the chosen cards into your graveyard and the rest into your hand, then shuffle your library. I mean, it seems like a cool, you know, kind of minigame kind of card. I mean, right. I can understand the rules committee not wanting collusion. You know, that's why Trade Sequence is banned. But you know, fact or fiction is still a thing in this format. And yes, you can actually just go ahead and pick out any 4 cards, so you can pretty much just win regardless of what 4 cards you pick. But then we also have cards like Gerard's Orders, which do similar things, not nearly as big, and yeah. So, like, I guess I'm given that seems like it would be a fun card to go ahead and experiment with.
Yeah, I could see Gifts Ungiven maybe getting a temporary unban, just to see where it goes. I mean, yeah, granted, it could lead to collusions, kind of like Trade Secrets did, but the difference being for Trade Secrets is like, you know, it was like a major collusion. It was like, I'm going to draw 48 cards, you're going to draw 48 cards, and now we're going to win the game together. Whereas with Trade Secrets, it's like, you know, I'm going to take these 2, slap them in your graveyard, you get 2. And then maybe it's over, and then at that point, it's basically over, right? It doesn't repeat, does it?
Nope, it's just that.
So, yeah. So yeah, I could easily see that being like, you know, kind of like, I could see it fitting in pretty well with the offerings, tempting offerings and stuff.
Alright, so I think...
And then if it sucked, you can always just go ahead and ban it again.
Alright, so, to finish this off, we have a couple of questions from the email.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm gonna have to, hold on, give me a moment, because I have to remind my friend to pick up her paints.
That's right, pick up your pants.
Paints, sir. Paints.
Yeah, pick up your pants.
Paints!
Pants.
Paints.
Pants. Pants.
Pick okay, maybe pants she up. Has, okay, maybe she has paint on her pants.
Pick up your paint pants, so you can go paint this room with my pants.
Alright, this
paint pants.
Alright, this question comes from Ryan. Wondering what three cards you think make Commander not fun. So I guess he's thinking, just asking about, you know, three cards in general. And off the top of my, so Ryan is asking, what three cards do we think just kind of ruin Commander games? Which one take the fun out of the game? And automatically, I can think of one card that does that so well for me. You ready for this?
Okay, go ahead.
Possibility Storm. I know a lot of people like the chaos cards out there, but my god, Possibility Storm has ruined so many games for me. Like, you know, you go ahead and you start working your hand. I'm not necessarily a combo player, I'm not a big combo player, or even a big control player. I've had decks where I just want to play things, and I kind of just want to play the things that I've drawn. And I have like a plan. I have a plan that I am trying to execute as a tactician. And this card just ruins that for me. It just ruins the kind of game I want to have.
Well, I can easily see that. I mean, you know, I can understand the concept of, because Possibility Sword's an enchantment, correct? And it sits around and it does it all the time, right?
Yep.
So I can see enchantment like that making too much chaos for certain players to want to deal with. I think that, like, if it was like a warped world, we wouldn't have as much of a problem because, yeah, it happens, but it's like one and done. Until somebody decides to put like Hive Mind down or something. But yeah, I could easily see like, you know, where you're coming at with that.
Yeah.
Let's see. Cards that are in EDH that I think ruin the format.
Not ruin the format, just ruin the fun.
I would just ruin the fun.
That's almost its own category entirely. Like, I'm trying to
I kind of wish I'd have known about this question earlier. Maybe I'd have had a chance to think of something. Because the only card that comes to my mind is Deadeye Navigator. I already bitched enough about that guy.
Alright, well, there's one for there. I'll go ahead and say, like, just any cards that kind of keep you from doing things like Teferi. Like, just getting rid of your Flash and saying you can only cast stuff at sorcery speed. I mean, that's annoying, and I'd like being able to have a lot of reaction available. That's part of what's fun for me.
Oh, okay. Can I put a category of card?
Yes.
Because it's not just a single card, but I would like to put the Praetors.
Yeah.
All five of the Praetors I'd have to slap into that section.
Anytime.
Just because of the fact that they just, all of them have some type of extremely negative effect for all the other players.
Yep. Anytime they're not on your side, right?
Yeah. And like, as far as I can tell, like, what was it? I haven't played around or really seen the Praetors that often lately. I mean, they were really popular during Scars of Mirrodin because, you know, they were new. But I haven't really seen them much lately. I don't really remember seeing too many decks that even have, like, any of them in it.
Yeah, I don't see a whole lot of Borinclex much anymore. I still see Sheoldred often enough. Yeah. And I still
I don't really see the red one. I don't see the blue one nearly as much now as I used to.
No, Elesh Norn and Sheoldred, those are really the two that I see most often than not. And even then, I don't see them nearly as often as I used to.
Yeah. Sheoldred, I don't even see as a commander, it's just her in decks.
Jinkataxius, Urbrask, Borinclex, Urbrask is just kind of underwhelming, because he's not nearly as, aggressive as the other ones are, despite the fact that he's in the most aggressive color.
Yeah, but the fact that he shows up, like, Urbrask out of the five is the one I would be willing to accept the most. Because the effect that he has on the board just feels a lot more temporary. I mean, granted, my guys come in tapped and I can't untap them this turn or whatever. But, granted, my guys come in tapped, right?
Yeah, that's all it is. You can tap. You can.
But that's all it is. But if I can untap them, they can be untapped. And, you know, I still have them next turn. So if my guy was summoning sick, it's fine. They weren't going to do anything this turn anyway. Except for maybe block. But as far as like, when it comes to, what's the blue one?
Jinkataxius.
Yeah, with Jinkataxius, he shows up and he just ruins my entire hand and there's nothing I can do about it. Sheoldred shows up and she kind of has like, you gain a creature and I lose a creature. So, but at least it's like a creature. If I can produce like a token, I can kind of prevent, quote unquote, what her major effect on the board for me. It's not like she shows up and wraps everything.
Yep. Although like, I will say the new legend rule kind of makes her a little more absurd though, because I have had games where it seemed like all the other three players had a shielder, but I didn't.
Turn shows up and you got to get rid of three dudes.
Yep. And they only have to get rid of like one, because they only have two triggers to fight, and then their own shielder brings back a dude, so they only have to have one extra dude.
Yeah, so, you know, they can still get with, like, well, Shielder's gonna bring this guy back, and I'm gonna make this token, and that cancels out your two guys' effects.
Yeah,
the one guy that doesn't have a Shielder, yeah, that dude's screwed.
I can see
with the new Legends rules, a lot of them being better, but Jin Gitaxis, I could just still see him be completely horrible.
Elish Norn's
I mean, granted, your turn comes around, you're gonna get a chance to draw your whole hand, but then you're going to be able, like, someone's turn's going to come by, you're going to discard the whole thing.
Yep. Voronklex and Jinkadaxes, I think they've just been hated out. I mean, anytime people drop them, the board state becomes so oppressive that, you know, it doesn't make the game fun for anyone unless you enjoy drinking the salty tears of your colleagues.
Real quick, what does Voronklex do again?
Voronklex is the one that doubles your mana. And then whenever an opponent taps a land for mana, it doesn't untap during their next untap step. And like, that's the one thing that pisses off new players too. They're like, but I killed it. And then you have to explain, no.
It's a state-based action and it stays on the stack until your next turn's over.
No, it's just a delay.
Right.
It's a
delay trigger, I mean.
Yeah, it's a delay trigger.
Right?
Yeah.
Not state-based action, it's a delay trigger. My bad. Sorry. I'm not the judge here, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah,
don't listen to me.
Yeah, it's a trigger, so new players get frustrated about that. I think that pretty much takes care of that.
I could see him being the new card to get slotted in for Silver and Primordial, now that he's gone.
Heaven help us all. Alright, so there is one last email here from the mailbag here.
Email.
It's actually, oddly enough, it's actually not a part of the email bag. So
is the email... The question of will we ever quote unquote get it?
I don't think that we ever will, but let's see.
Yeah.
We're
always trying to get it. We want to get it. We tell people to go and get it, but I don't think it has ever been gotten.
Let's see. There is someone. Let's see. Well, Calvin, this is a
yes,
question.
Sir.
This isn't the question I'm looking for, but you want to go ahead and tell people where we get the outro, intro, and in between music?
Sure, I'll do that. Every time that you hear Commander Cast now, we no longer use the Beach Boy soft music that was used prior to, what was it, a couple episodes ago? Like, I think it was the beginning of this season, actually.
Prior to season 12.
Yeah, season 12. All the episodes prior to season 12, you heard, like, Beach Boy music, or you'd hear the original, like this sound clip right here. That is what you used to hear during all of the previous episodes of Commander Cast. But we no longer use that. And that's because currently I have found a way to have music and I've taken a little liberty with what the music I put up there. In fact, the music I use, I was only really intending on using for one single episode. And that was supposed to be like the end episode of every season. But, you know, William and I kind of enjoyed the sound a little bit too much. And we've turned it into the new theme music. There's the opening thing is the Terminator, redone in metal. The strategy theme, I believe, is Power Rangers.
That's Community.
Redone in metal.
Power
That's
Rangers.
That's Community. No, yeah, Community. The strategy is the, Dragon Ball Z theme music, redone in metal.
Mm-hmm.
The technology is the, Pirates of the Caribbean, redone in metal. And the exit music is Doctor Who's theme song, redone in metal. And each and every one of these songs is done by the same man who has a YouTube channel. It's 331E Rock. That's his YouTube name. It's this one guy. He does a whole bunch of different covers for different songs and different things. If you go to his YouTube channel, you will hear pretty much every song that I've used, and some even better ones, and some other ones that are really great. He's done, like, versions of RoboCop.
Hold on.
What was that? What'd you say?
Nothing.
What was that ocean
before? The video started playing when I went to his profile page. So you may or may not have, you may or may not have My Heart Will Go On Meets Metal on... My Heart Will Go On Meets Metal. Well, that's definitely not something I expected to hear today.
Yeah, like, but that's the thing, it's the videos he plays are him usually playing his guitar and has various, like, in, like, the other instruments and stuff in the background, but you can watch him shred. He does, what is it, My Heart Will Go On in Metal, RoboCop Meets Metal, there's,
He's got Gundam Style, Skyrim.
Yeah, like, the What's This from the Nightmare Before Christmas Meets Metal, Ghostbusters, Benny Hill, Adam's Family, Silent Hill. He just has like a plethora, if you will, of just all these awesome songs that he's done over in heavy metal themes. And a lot of them I really personally enjoyed. And I personally just snatched them because I figured, hey, why not? It's not like we're like using the money for... It's not like we're gaining, like, financially off of his work. We don't get paid for this. And we're giving credit where credit's due. Only reason it hasn't been in the show notes currently is because I just never got around to actually adding the tag down there. It's just mainly laziness. But, you know, anyone who's ever asked, that's where it is. So go right over there. See Eric. See him do his thing. He's the man. He's amazing. He's got some really amazing music. Some of them you're gonna hate, a lot of them you're gonna like, because some of them are just songs where it's like, that was cool, but I didn't really think it was gonna sound like that. And in the middle of certain ones, it's like, you know, he has, like, guitar solos that are other songs as well.
Alright. So, we have one final question here. And this actually wasn't part of the mailbag, but it's actually kind of touching, so I want to go ahead and share it here. This one's from Seb. Hey there, Will and Calvin. Long time listener, long time ADH player. First time writing. I wanted to start off by saying I love the show. Both the podcast and the website exemplify everything that's good about the format. Rambling, fun, community-driven. You do an excellent job of making me reconsider cards and strategies I've been using for years, as well as bringing totally new cards to my attention from time to time. So, first of all, thank you, Seb, for that. That's actually the primary reason I wanted to continue the cast, was pretty much for that reason. I thought I was doing a great thing for the community. I thought it was just a great educational tool for newer players. But he goes on to write, I've been meaning to write in for a long time, but what finally convinced me to do so was episode 8 of season 11. I know, I have a lot of catching up to do. Specifically, Will's coming out as female-identifying and bisexual. Magic, as with many other nerd communities, tend to have this reputation of being comprised almost entirely of straight, white, and East Asian, to a lesser extent, of cisgendered men. It's really heartening to see people who are involved in the community in a prominent way, proudly, and openly bucking the stereotype. Basically, just wanted to let you know that I really appreciate your work, and keep doing all the good stuff you do, which makes Commander Cast almost my favorite Magic podcast. Secondly, only to drive to work. That said, if you're going to get beaten at something Magic related by someone, there's no shame in having it be Morrow. Seb.
Exactly.
So, Seb, again, really thank you for those really kind words. When I came out, I guess I'm still kind of working through what exactly I identify as, you know, I think some people would probably call it something like gender fluidity or something like that. I definitely do use female pronouns from time to time, and I feel very comfortable and I like doing that. But, you know, it's still something I'm going through. So when I first came out as identifying partially as female, there was some really good support on Twitter. Not a whole lot, but enough to make me feel that, you know, okay, this was okay. Everyone, you know, the Magic community has a reputation of being like this really big fest all the time, especially when things get banned or new cards get released or the border changes. I'm looking at you, Eric, but you know, having guys like Jay Bush, you know, saying like, good for you, hey, way to be proud, you know, stuff like that really helps. And that's the primary reason I did come out the way I did, was to kind of go ahead and help raise awareness. You'll get some peripheral vision going on this. You know, I'm not trying to make this like what the podcast is about. I'm not going to turn this into LGBTQ AAQ cast. Nothing like that. But, you know, just kind of like...
No idea what that was, he just said.
LGBTQQA. Like, they keep adding letters on to include more groups to what it is.
Ah, okay.
Like, there's lesbian, gay, bisexual, transsexual...
Trisexual.
Queer, questioning, asexual. And there are probably other letters that I don't know about yet.
That's right. Ex-sexual. Pornographic.
It's probably a thing. So,
it's a thing.
So, yeah, thank you for that. And Calvin?
Yes, sir.
I don't think we'll really have a need to go through the other segments because we have recorded 2.5 hours worth of podcast.
I personally really have enjoyed spending this time with my co-host, and I personally would like to spend a lot more time with him again in future episodes. So if you ever really feel, if you're still listening, of course you're still listening if you're hearing this, but you know, if you're listening and you want to go ahead and let us know how you feel about this, we would really appreciate some emails and some comments. If you like the idea of hearing me and Will just sit here randomly talking to each other for God knows how long this actually turned out to be, you know, shoot an email to us. Because I'd be more than willing to sit down and just have a chat with William. Get a nice chance to break up the four-person format. Maybe we'll even do like an email bag once a season. You know, 4 times a year, just me and William sitting here shooting the ass with you, the listeners, and the stuff that you want to talk to us about and access.
And hey, you know what? We also have a secret project coming out in the middle of the seasons, quite potentially. So we'll be experimenting with that, and it'll just be me and Calvin, maybe a third guest. I don't know. All right, so let's go ahead and go into the outro. And I don't know if you just want to break up the mailbag with like the different segments anyway or whatever.
Still have room for the community strategy and technology.
All right. This has been Commander Cast, Season 12, Episode 7. I want to thank my guests here today, also my co-host and my producer, Calvin. Thank you for being awesome.
Well, thank you for having me on, I guess.
Calvin, if people want to reach you, where could they do that?
Oh, if you want to reach me personally, you can always go over to Twitter, at Captain Red Zone, or you can hit me up in an email, CaptainRedZone@gmail.com. You can also find me over on Facebook, just type in Captain Red Zone, and I show up on Captain Red Zone Russell.
All right, and you can always find me, I run the CommanderCast stuff. You can email me, CommanderCast@gmail.com. You can also hit me up on the Twitters, I'm @CommanderCast. We also have a blog on Tumblr, CommanderCast.tumblr.com. You know, I like to go ahead and blog games and, you know, posts from Tabak or maybe Doug or Omaro, stuff like that. So it's a nice place to go. And actually, I'm looking back and, yep, those are some pretty crazy games I've got on there. I can't really think of anywhere else you would hit me up at because we don't do the G+ thing.
Yeah, I'm thinking about actually making the CommanderCast Google Plus doc. Because I've come to recently realize that Google Plus has become so devoid of actual entertainment and information. And as long as you have a Google Plus account and it syncs up with your Twitter and Facebook, they will take your Facebook updates and your Twitter stats and stuff, and they will let people on Google Plus know this is what you said on other sites.
That's pretty handy, and you know what? I like being ahead of the times, but you know what? We definitely have
Facebook. Ahead of the times.
We have the CommanderCast page on Facebook. You can do us there. Judson runs that, so thank you to Judson. Thank you to all of our people on CommanderCast for being awesome writers. And Calvin, who does our outro?
Who does our outro? That would be 331ERock on YouTube. Or Eric. I'm not really sure how he pronounces it, but I'm pretty sure it's ERock. So go over there, check out his YouTube page, click on it, see his videos, see how awesome he is, and how awesome he makes our show because of the fact that we use his music.
Oh yeah. So, I think that about does it. Calvin, do you think of anything else we're supposed to take care of?
Oh, yeah. If you're listening to this, you can always go over to CommanderCast.com and comment on the show as well.
Ah! Oh, I keep forgetting. I keep forgetting about that because for some reason, my website hates me and doesn't let me actually comment on my own site.
It lets me do it.
But whatever it is.
Oh, and if you're a listener and you're interested in being CommanderCast, shoot me an email.
Ah, but whatever it is, it's on CommanderCast. So join us next week for more community strategy and technology. Calvin and I will both be here. And as always, let's get it! Actually, you know what? I think what I can do is I can pull up the cock myself and
gross.
You know what I mean? I can go ahead and
that's why I say gross.
At any rate, I can copy and paste the deck onto my side of Cockatrice.
Because light or blue, don't worry. I'm just using this at the moment, and then I'm going to probably move to the kitchen or something.
Who you got over there?
Hmm?
Who are you talking to over there?
I'm talking to my wife.
Ah. Hello, Mrs. Calvin.
She can't hear you. You're on a headphone.
All right, just you and me today, so I guess there's really no need to bullshit for half an hour.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess we could, but that'd pretty much be what we do anyway, and I guarantee you...
That defeats the purpose of bullshit now.
Yeah, and I guarantee you we're just going to end up bullshit at some point during the show anyway. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and just start this off. You know what the best part is? I have absolutely no third guest here to realize that I flub of a line.
Yeah, this just be something that the audience will have to listen to on a later period. Do that voodoo that you do so well.
Voodoo?
You do.
Do what?
Voodoo.
Ah, you missed it, man. Labyrinth.
Alright. Yeah, the movie with David Bowie where he owes somebody a shitload of money.
No, I don't think it's quite that.
No. That's what Labyrinth is. That's what Labyrinth actually is. There's David Bowie in it, right?
Right.
And he's juggling the little, like, metal balls and kidnapping kids and stuff.
Right.
But I've come to the decision that the whole point that the only reason he's even done that movie is because he owed somebody a shit ton of money.
I always thought it was... I always thought it was to get his crotch, its own acting credits.
Nah. When I watch that movie, the only thing that comes to my mind is, like, David Bowie making a bet with somebody, losing horribly, and then trying to, like, you know, win it back. And they're like, okay, well, if, you know what, double or nothing, you can get all of this back, but if you lose, I get to do whatever the hell I want with you in a movie. And, you know, the only clause was nothing pornographic, so he just gave him, like, really, really tight pants. And then just gave him some of the shittiest lines ever written down and forced him to say them because he owed that man a lot. Of money.
I actually thought David Bowie was all right in that movie. Like, I saw it for the first time a couple of years ago with a friend, and really the only bad part was the heroin.
Yeah, that's the part that got him into this movie in the first place.
That's the key word, on air. We've definitely had episodes where it's just like, okay, neither of us are actually willing to hang up yet, so we just talk about Batman or Yu-Gi-Oh or whatever.
But I was talking about Yu-Gi-Oh today, actually.
Actually, my shop is actually going to start running competitive Yu-Gi-Oh! Tournaments, and I'm actually really excited about that. Because I live in one of those cities where, like, there's only one store to go play Yu-Gi-Oh! If you want to play a Yu-Gi-Oh! Tournament on a weekly basis. But the store is run by scum, and it's like walking into a can of sardines and trying to find elbow room for your mat. So, no. And then what happened was the store owner actually started capping out the events. He's like, you know, fuck this shit. All these guys are crowding in on my tabletop spaces, so I'm going to start capping the events at, like, 25 when they keep getting, like, 50 or something like that. So my store actually started taking them on, even though they don't stock any Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards whatsoever.
Mm.
So I'm actually looking really forward to that. Oh, that reminds me. I need to get everyone on the staff's address so I can try and send them something.
Cancer. He's trying to give us all cancer.
Ooh, close.
All Sagittarius? Right. He's trying to give us all Sagittarius? I think diseases would be much better if they were actually named after all just zodiac signs.
I was about to ask. I mean, what is... I mean, we're in Theros, so I guess it relates, but how...
It doesn't. This is the rambling bullshit of the show that we were talking about what's going to inevitably happen.
Inevitably. Damn it, who's cooking beef right now?
It ain't me.
No, must be like the people who live below me or something, because I keep smelling beef. It smells way too good.
Alright, so this is the point where I'm going to say, where's the beef?
That's an old meme.
That's an old commercial. And I'm pretty sure, like, half of our listeners aren't going to know where that's from.
I'm pretty sure half of our listeners aren't even going to be able to hear this.
But they're going to hear this part about the beef, because this is going at the end of the show.
Alright, so Calvin...
Maybe not the part where I say this is going at the end of the show, but this is going at the end of the show. Try to keep it and leave it up as a cube.
Oh, that's gonna be nice. Actually, that reminds me. I need to actually use the. Have you heard of CubeTutor?
CubeTutor?
Yeah, CubeTutor.
I haven't heard of CubeTutor. What is CubeTutor?
CubeTutor is this really awesome online site that where you can go ahead and you can put in the cards and manage your cube up there. But it also lets you draft your cube over and over again, and lets other people draft your cube too. Like, you don't actually get to play with the decks that you draft, but you get to draft them. Yeah, but you get to draft them and you get to see how other people are drafting them. Like, it records what they're drafting, what they're taking, when they're taking it. So it's actually, in terms of just finding out how your cube is being drafted, it's the best tool for just collecting data. Like, it's even got Jay Bush using it.
Yeah, it sounds like it would be an amazing piece. But the main reason I think that this would be great to turn into a cube is, one, I want to get those 60 unique cards, because if those 60 unique cards that are printed for the set, if even 20 of them, I'll be as happy with 12. If 12 of them have some type of effect on draft itself, like the librarian cog thingy, construct, if even like 12 of those cards have some type of effect on draft, I think it'd be amazing to slop into a cube. And the fact is, like, even after the cube drafting is over, there's still, what, 3-3, like, that artifact one was still a 3-3 for 4 mana. So it's still perfectly fine just to have as a body in your deck.
Oh, yeah. But in all seriousness... I'm gonna read that over again. But in all seriousness... The primary thing I'm trying to get... Calvin, please cut all that out.
Oh, that's going to get cut. It then probably slapped at the end of the episode.
Yep.
So, I'll cut it. I'll save it for later. Continue.
All right. For the past...
Actually, you know what? No. Thank you for recording tonight, because I currently am actually on my cell phone, and I don't have the option to record, because I'm in the middle of a snowstorm, and I can't leave my house.
Oh, Calvin's getting snowed in.
Yeah, I'd rather be snowed in than snowed out.
Yep. Everyone keeps talking about black ice, and never pay attention to white snow.
Yeah, everybody remember, there's black guys out here. Don't let them catch you slipping.
Wait, what? That, okay, so, Calvin, if people want
to- Yeah, it was slightly racist. But I'm allowed to say it, though, because, you know, because I'm black.
ManorGas.com